Welcome to the Young Turks. We got a hell of a Monday show for you, as we always do. Monday shows are gigantic. Now, here's what you need to do for anyone who's watching this stream live. Go tell your friends, family, neighbors, and Randy Gonzalez. They have got to watch the second segment of the show. Now, look, you got to watch this segment too, isn't it? But be a share bear, share the stream, because we're going to talk about O'Reilly's sexual harassment lawsuit. And the revelations there are lawsuits that were settled. The revelations there are unbelievable and damning. You don't want to miss that story. And then there's a separate Fox News sexual harassment lawsuit now against Roger Ailes. Another one, that's in the second hour. We'll have that for you as well. Also in the second hour, Trump supporters are in a state of shock and disbelief that their programs are going to get cut. They thought Trump was going to look out for them. Okay, those stories continue to roll in. They're fascinating. But we are going to start this show with big news about the filibuster and then Bernie TV, another well-kept secret. Okay, so let me give you the latest on the Gorsuch situation. Okay. So yet another Democrat has come out and said that they will vote against the filibuster and in favor of Gorsuch. It's Joe Donnelly, Democrat of Indiana. These are the blue dog Democrats, so-called centrists or moderates that they're called. They're no such thing. They are in fact conservative and largely corporatist. And every once in a while on a social issue, they will not be barbarians. And hence, they are considered moderates. No, they almost always go with a pro-corporate position. Gorsuch is a monstrously pro-corporate judge and perhaps soon justice. And I say monstrously because he ruled in cases where literally someone's life was on the line, and he said, well, no, if they didn't listen to the corporation that told them to sit there and die, well, then they should lose their case. That's a literal decision. Gorsuch was the only guy out of all the justices, I'm sorry, all the judges in the country that looked at it that ruled in that direction. So nonetheless, Joe Donnelly going, yay, that's my guy. Now, first I want to show you what Joe Donnelly said back in the days when the Democrats had introduced Merrick Garland. Remember, there was about a year left in Obama's term, and the Republicans said, no, we don't care who he is, we're never, ever, ever going to give him a hearing. And Donnelly pretended to be upset about that at the time. Let's watch.
What do you say to those people who say that President Obama should let the next president do so?
Well, the next president can do that when we have a next president.
Right.
And if there's a Supreme Court opening then. We have almost a year left in President Obama's term. Our job is to review that person, and if we don't find that person acceptable, turn them down. But if we do, to vote yes. We don't have the option to just stick it in a drawer for the next year and pretend it's not there. Look, you do your job when the opportunity comes up, when you have to do your job. And that's right now. Next year, when there's a new president and that president nominates somebody, I'll vote yes or no on that person as well. But we have almost a year to go in President Obama's term. You simply don't walk away and stop doing your work.
Well, they did. And you know what Joe Donnelly did about it at the time? Not a damn thing. The Republicans for a year blocked Merrick Garland, and Joe Donnelly barely put up a fight. Oh, golly gee, you got to do your job. Well, you didn't. So is he going to fight back at all now that the Republicans are in charge? The answer is, of course, hell no. Huffington Post says the moderate Democratic senator, again, it drives me crazy when they call him moderate. Anyway, said he was, quote, deeply disappointed how Republicans refused to consider Merrick Garland, President Barack Obama's nominee to the high court. But that as a senator, he could, quote, only vote on the nominee that comes to the Senate floor. No, you can do many different things. If you were that disappointed, you could say, hey, you know what? You guys didn't let our guy get a hearing. So I'm going to vote to block your nominee. And what I call the Garland rule should be very simple, very easy to argue. I don't know why the Democrats aren't doing it. We will at a minimum block Gorsuch, your nominee, for as long as you block the Garland nomination. So for 1 year, we will do nothing about it. We will filibuster it, and all Democrats should be united on that. A year later, we'll have hearings and we'll have a conversation about it. But until then, filibuster. No, Joe Donnelly doesn't do that. As usual with the corporate Democrats, he bows his head meekly and says, oh, I was outraged at what happened before, but I'll give the Republicans everything they want anyway. Typical corporate Democrat move. Donnelly also said, according to Huffington Post, that he supported retaining a 60-vote threshold for Supreme Court nominees. In other words, I don't want the Republicans to take away the filibuster. Well, Joe, what are you ever going to use it for? Gorsuch is to the right of Antonin Scalia. Are you ever going to use a filibuster? If you don't use it for Gorsuch, especially after the injustice of what happened with Garland, that means, Joe, I got news for you, you're never going to use it. So there's no point in having it in your back pocket if you're never going to unleash it. And stop kidding yourself. You're never going to oppose the Republicans in a real way. Your job is to be weak. They call them moderate. No, they're feckless and weak Democrats, these guys. Now, the rest of the Democratic Party, amazingly, managed to put together a filibuster despite these guys selling them out. But they think that this is going to help them in Indiana. And I bet you, look, realpolitik, the Democratic leadership probably talked this through and said, hey, we still have 41 senators that could block Gorsuch through a filibuster until the Republicans take it away. So we could release these so-called centrist Democrats in states that voted for Trump to go vote with the Republicans so they don't lose their elections. Voting with the Republicans doesn't prevent losing to Republicans, it prevents victory. Because what Joe Donnelly and Manchin and Heitkamp, what they're sending, the message that they're sending to their voters at home is, the Republicans are right, I'm wrong, so vote for me. Why would they vote for a Democrat if you just told them the Democrats are wrong and the Republicans are right? Especially on an issue that you could win. If you ran against Gorsuch as a big business candidate, the American people, yes, including in Indiana, hate big business. It polls at 15%. It polls lower than the media. It polls even lower than politicians like you. But you're not going to run that campaign because all your donors are big business. These Democrats disgust me. So we ask you guys, hey, should the Democrats take a stand on this? TYTnetwork.com/stand to vote in that poll. Now we know what the results are going to be. This is not, of course, not a scientific poll. The reason that we did it is because we want to show Democrats, hey, a progressive audience is definitely interested in you guys taking a stand and not cowering. Turns out cowering is not good for politics, and you're going to depress your own base. They're not going to show up to vote for you. That's why these blue dog Democrats almost never win re-election. Guess what the results of that poll are so far? 94-6. So if you're looking for Indiana Democrats who are going to stand with you, Joe Donnelly, you got all 6% of them. The other 94% going, no, you should have shown strength and you should have actually fought for us, which Joe Donnelly, as usual, has now decided he's not going to do. He's going to lay down instead. And finally, there's one other petition in this case that I want to bring your attention to. It's the National Nurses Union, Just Democrats, brand new Congress, real progressive groups saying we must stop Trump from taking over the Supreme Court. Go sign that petition. Show the strength of the progressive movement. That's at nogorsuch.org, nogorsuch.org. Go do that today. All right, Joe Donnelly, when you run as Republican light in Indiana next time around, well, first of all, you're going to lose in the primary, and very likely it's going to be someone named a Justice Democrat that beats you. But if you can somehow survive that, which I very, very much doubt, then you're going to lose to a Republican who's going to make the very simple case. He thinks Republicans are awesome, and I'm a Republican. It's amazing that they can't see those losing strategies. All right. Now, let me go to what I think was the next graphic there. Yes. Okay. Okay. I have shockingly good news. I say shockingly not because it is dramatic, but because it is surprising. The Democrats have decided they're going to filibuster Neil Gorsuch. Whoa. Now, not all the Democrats are on board, of course. And people like Donnelly, Heitkamp, and Manchin have said, they blocked our nominee for close to a year. Who cares? I'm not going to block their nominee. In fact, I'll vote yes. I'll help the Republicans put a guy more right-wing than Antonin Scalia on the court. But now, credit where credit is due, we've got 41 Democratic senators who are going to actually agree to do a filibuster. Now, if you don't know what a filibuster is, that's a tradition and a rule in the Senate that says that you need, if the minority party decides that they don't want to go forward, they could do a filibuster, and you would need 60 votes to break a filibuster. and hence 41 Democratic senators now saying they will join a filibuster means that you cannot break it. Now, of course, a lot of different things can happen, and eventually that filibuster could give in, or as I'm about to explain to you, that Republicans could take away that filibuster. By the way, the other normal thing that happens is you withdraw the nominee and you put forward a new nominee that actually can get agreement enough from the Senate to be confirmed. Okay, Patrick Leahy is one of the senators that came in near the end and said yes, he will in fact vote no and join the filibuster. And his reasons were because Gorsuch during his confirmation hearings were, quote, excruciatingly evasive and, quote, patronizing. Very true. As you watch Gorsuch throughout, he would constantly say, oh, that's a political issue. I, of course, cannot comment on that, Senator. Yet we know that you claim that you can't comment on political issues. There's no need to be patronizing. And he did it over and over again with that smug look on his face, like, perhaps you don't know this, but I cannot comment on political issues. And then pretended he has no opinions at all. Leahy would ask him about the most established Supreme Court precedents, and he'd be like, well, you know, a court case could come before me that involves that president, so I can't say anything. In other words, you're just going to sit here and not tell us anything about what you actually think, and you think it's cute because, hey, I got enough Republican senators, so I'm just going to sit here and not answer any of your questions, unless you ask me about how I played basketball in the Supreme Court with Byron White, which is what Ted Cruz did. And they snickered for about 6 minutes together, like, oh, really? How did he shoot his shots? Oh, you played horse with him, did you? Those are the only questions he answered. Well, if you're not going to answer the questions, then we're not going to confirm you. Very easy. Now, Huffington Post reports Democratic senators have been vowing for weeks to deny a vote to President Donald Trump's court pick that Schumer did for a long time. He's their leader in the Senate, and have been inching closer to the 41 members they needed to filibuster him. They hit the magic number on Monday when Senator Chris Coons of Delaware announced he will join the blockade. So it has begun. So Republican reaction, Lindsey Graham says, we'll change the rules if we have to. Now, Lindsey Graham is part of the group of Republicans when they were in the minority who was like, oh my God, the filibuster is the most important thing there is in the world. Our beloved Senate traditions. How could the Democrats possibly think about taking away the filibuster? Now he's like, yeah, we'll change it if we have to. That's it. We're in charge now. Who cares? We're just messing with you guys. You guys are idiots for ever listening to us. You let us block all those Obama nominees when you guys had the majority? Stupid. That's what you are. The minute we're in power, filibuster's gone, right? That's what Lindsey Graham's going to do. Don't spare me your crocodile tears, you and John McCain, as if you ever cared about Senate traditions or rules. Total nonsense. All you care about is power. So Senator Chuck Schumer says, if they decide to change the rules, it will be on their back. Look, I'm not blaming Chuck Schumer for saying that. That's a correct quote. That's a fine job, and he led the organization to filibuster, so give him credit on that. But the fact that we're even having a debate on this is madness. He's saying, well, if they get rid of the filibuster, it'll be their fault. Of course, whose fault would it be? The Republicans are going to the press and going, well, the Democrats made us do it. It's like some domestic abuse defended in court going, well, she made me do it. She made me hit her. What could I do? That's not a defense. No, if the Republicans do it, you're taking away the filibuster. Not, oh, well, the Democrats wouldn't agree. Yeah, that's the whole point of a filibuster, that they vehemently disagree. That's why they're filibustering. So if you're taking it away, it's not that the other party made you do it. It's that you are choosing to do it because you just want to get your pro-corporate guy Gorsuch in under any and all circumstances. You don't care. You never cared about Senate rules. Don't, please spare me. Now, nonetheless, they say Republicans, meanwhile, are angry that Democrats are forcing them to decide between confirming Gorsuch and gutting Senate rules they actually like. Even the Huffington Post reporting it that way. They don't actually like those rules. They only like those rules when they're in the minority. The minute they're in the majority, this is not 3 years into a Trump administration. This is their first opportunity. They're going to immediately destroy the filibuster rule. They're going to take away. They don't like the rule. They only liked it when it helped them. Come on. Stop humoring these Republicans. as if they're honest actors, as if they give a damn. All they care about is power. Wake up. This is not a real debate about whether the Republicans actually care about the filibuster or whose fault it is. The Democrats made us do it. Preposterous. Hey, are you men or are you not men? Are you people who are going to stick with what you said or not? Because the Republicans claim that they are, we are so strong, right? And now you're saying the minority party is making you take away the filibuster? How weak are you? Of course, it has nothing to do with that. You're acting of your own volition. Finally, we go to John McCain. He says about taking away the filibuster, it makes me very sad. Oh, are you sad, John? You know, one thing you could do if you're so sad about taking away the filibuster is don't take it away. All that time you pretended to be in favor of it, when your ass was in the minority, and you were like, oh, Democrats, our beloved traditions, how dare you even think about it? Now, first chance, John McCain's like, oh, I got to take it away. Oh, I'm so sad while doing it. Idiot Democrats and idiot media believed me when I said that I cared about the filibuster. John McCain, Lindsey Graham, you never cared about the filibuster. You never cared about Senate history. You never cared about Senate tradition. All you cared about was your own power. And you're proving it at the very first opportunity. Okay. Oh, maybe they won't take away the filibuster. What did I tell you? 100 times I told you. The Democrats are like, no, we can't take it away. No. What if we're in the minority? What did I tell you then? I said, if they're in the minority, the Republicans are going to take it away instantly anyway. You're not losing a goddamn thing. But they sat there and let nominee after nominee be blocked for 6 years while the Democrats were the majority in the Senate. Oh no, I do declare. And then they finally took it away for non-Supreme Court nominees right as they were about to lose their majority. You can't get any more pathetic than the Democrats. Anyway, they're actually doing the right thing here. I'm trying to give them credit. And the media who keeps calling it 50-50 is the worst. You're the worst. You have no credibility at all. The whole time when the Democrats were the majority, you told them, you better not take away the filibuster. That would be a very partisan, terrible thing to do. Now the Republicans are doing it. Oh well. Yeah, I can't tell. It's a debate. Maybe the Democrats made them do it. It's not a debate. And when they broke the record on obstruction, the record on filibusters used, they nearly tripled the record on filibusters used, the Republicans did. What did the media say? Oh, I can't tell. Maybe it's Obama that's being obstructionist. Maybe it's the Republicans. I can't tell. Gee, I wonder why people hate the mainstream media. Okay. Now, we do have an answer for the mainstream media, and it's not just us. Now, let's go to Bernie Sanders. New shirt coming out of the collar a little bit. All right. This is a fun story. Did you guys know this Bernie TV? Well, I have to be honest with you. I recently found out about it. It turns out there are 4 episodes in. Now, my surprise about that story is part of the story. The reason is, before the campaign ended, the mainstream media talked nonstop about Trump TV, Trump TV. Oh my God, if Trump loses, he's going to do Trump TV, Trump TV. Oh my God, what's he going to do? Now, it turns out one of the candidates, who was one of the top contenders, has actually started his own broadcast. And nary a peep. I can't, hey, mainstream media, where are you? But to be fair, Bernie Sanders also, come on, reach out. I mean, I'm sure he reached out to the corporate media and they largely ignored him. But you might want to let other people know too. Anyway, it doesn't matter because you guys found out and you're watching it in droves. So I'm going to show you a clip from it. I'm going to give you the numbers of how well it's doing. And then the fact that the mainstream media has ignored it is going to be even more shocking. Okay. Let me go to the one outlet that did cover it. Now, this is ironic. It's Alex Seitz-Wald from NBC News, who is greatly dismissive of other Bernie Sanders movements. And they put that in scare quotes. He's got another scare quote here. But overall, I give him credit for actually covering it. He says, the Vermont senator has 4.7 million followers on Twitter and 7 million likes on Facebook, more than double that of his closest competition in Congress, including national stars, so-called stars, like Elizabeth Warren and Cory Booker. Okay, good, that's absolutely true. And you could use that online to get a big audience, and it turns out he has. So what's on the show? Guests on the Bernie Sanders show have so far included Reverend William Barber, the leader of the Moral Monday movement, anti-fracking filmmaker Josh Fox, former science guy Bill Nye, whose conversation with Sanders about climate change racked up 4.6 million views and 25,000 shares. Now, isn't that amazing? 4.6 million views for an interview with Bill Nye, the science guy. That's a lot of views. And so you saw it all over cable news, right? Nothing from cable news. Okay. And then again, the writer here, Alex Seitzwald, my old friend, I'll put that in scare quotes. For Sanders, it's all about controlling his message and getting around the quote unquote corporate media. He puts the corporate media in quotes as if like, oh, that's what he claims. Like, is there really a corporate media as he works for NBC News? Anyway, yes, there's a corporate media, the one almost completely ignoring this entire story. Again, though, ironic credit to Seitzwald, credit where credit is due, he's at least covering it. So now let's go to some of the numbers. His Facebook page has generated 164 million video views since the beginning of the year. Holy cow, that's really, really successful. Nonetheless, sound of silence. Now, I'm going to show you a clip from there. He interviewed Jane Mayer. Jane Mayer is a great investigative reporter, has done some great work in the past in magazine form, and then in terms of books that she's written. She wrote a great one about money and politics and the Koch brothers. But here they're going to talk about voter fraud. She talks about something, again, that you almost never hear about in cable news. Let's watch.
Voter suppression and the so-called myth of voter fraud. Now, one of the areas that I am deeply concerned about is the attacks on democracy. So it's not just billionaires able to buy elections. It is a very deliberate effort on the part of many Republicans to try to suppress the vote, making it harder for poor people or older people or young people or people of color to participate. And they do that under the guise of voter fraud.
Well, again, this is the kind of fake scholarship that's come out of the think tanks funded by these partisan sources. And some of the idea of voter fraud has been promoted by the Bradley Foundation, for instance, which is a nonprofit that's funded by a lot of the same right-wing money. And it confuses people. People get worried and think that their votes are, you know, going to be stolen or the elections be stolen. And it's just...
Well, voter fraud is a serious issue if it was real. And the significance of this is that Republicans will win elections if poor people, if older people, if working class people, if people of color are kept away from the voting booths. And that's exactly what the intention of this whole effort is about, is it not?
Well, I mean, they wouldn't say so, but it certainly seems to be the effect of it.
So, I worked in cable news. I know what they'll say about why they won't cover that. Well, I mean, that's pretty dry there. You have a senator talking to a reporter. Are people really going to watch that for 20 some odd minutes? Well, apparently they are, because let me give you the numbers. In the last week, 1.8 million people were talking about Sanders' Facebook page. According to the platform's metric, more than the New York Times, MTV, Vice, and some network news outlets. Seems like a lot of people are talking about it anyway. And then my favorite fact, an even 40-second call, cell phone video, I should say, of Sanders talking next to a FICUS plan can rack up 14 million views. When's the last time anyone on cable news got 14 million views? The leading host on cable news is Bill O'Reilly. On a great night, he gets a little over 3 million views. Sanders is basically more than quadrupling that on a 40-second video, okay, on his cell phone. Yet, sound of silence. Now, the real reason the corporate media doesn't cover that is because they just told you that the Bradley Foundation, which is supposed to be a think tank, is actually a front for conservative propaganda and propaganda on voter fraud. And that voter fraud is mythical. It's not true. It's not backed up by the data. But the Republican billionaires fund the think tanks, which push that agenda out. The Republican politicians take it and put it out. And then the corporate media tells you 50-50. Republicans say there's voter fraud. Democrats say there isn't voter fraud. They don't never talk to you about where that propaganda came from in the first place. That's exactly why things like Bernie TV are needed. Look, Bernie's done this many times in the past, so if you're surprised by it, it's not that unusual. He just has a much better platform now. Back in Vermont, he used to do a public access show. I know how that feels. And he did that because he's like, look, I'm here to spread the message in any way that I can. Then when he was a congressman, he used to do a weekly radio show. He used to, then later, he would appear on Tom Hartman's show every week, because the guy is dying to get his message out in any way that he can. But now, because of the internet, he can get it out to millions upon millions of people, no matter how much the corporate media doesn't cover it. Now, finally, there was a discussion in the article about, should progressives be concerned about this? If you do a progressive show, will it be competitive? No, look, I get why they think that way, because in the old world, everything is competitive, right? And they asked, actually, Bill Press, who's now part of the TYT network. And he, of course, had the right answer. No, it's not competition, because unlike the right wing and the corporate media, we actually believe in our message. We actually want that message to go out to as many people as possible. So if they hear that message through the Young Turks, awesome. If they hear it through Bernie Sanders, awesome. That is not competition. That is a terrific development. So if it took Bernie Sanders to just sit down in front of a camera and start doing these interviews, then fantastic. I find it amazing, though, that the people who are obsessed with Trump TV wouldn't stop talking about it, even though it never came to fruition. Now that there is actually a politician doing it and doing it at record-breaking numbers, haven't said a word about it. Interesting. Okay, we got to take a break. When we come back, remember, share this stream wherever you're watching, because the details of Bill O'Reilly's sexual harassment lawsuits, they have been settled. He has paid them out. So they're true. They are amazing. You don't want to miss it. All right, back on the Young Turks, let me thank people who've contributed to our journalism drive at tytnetwork.com/go. 50 bucks from Willie in Georgia, 127 from Austin in South Dakota, and $270 from Paul in Oklahoma. You guys are the best. Thank you. You're making great journalism possible. We've got our guys in the field working on stories as we speak. Now, let me give you some tweets. Mike says, even if being GOP light did help Democrats win in those states, what is the point of having that D but never voting accordingly? So they'll tell you, no, look, from time to time on issues that don't affect my corporate donors, I do vote with the Democratic Party. Wow, are they not merciful? But you're absolutely right. Even if it was effective politics, which it isn't, what the hell did we elect you as a Democrat for? All right, the Mad Lib writes in, I prefer political parties that haven't been captured by corporate interests. I hear you on that, brother. Philip Schaps writes in, If McConnell kills the filibuster, the next Democratic president gets to put Cornel West or even Barack Obama on the Supreme Court. Damn. But now let me tell you something. If the Democrats were to get back in charge and it was these Democrats, now luckily it won't be because we're going to replace them with progressives. But if it was these corporatist Democrats, one, they would never consider Cornel West, even if they had ultimate power. Even if they had 100 senators, they wouldn't put Cornel West on the Supreme Court. Because that's not who they are. They don't want Cornel West. He would rule against corporations and their donors. They would never do that. Okay? And even if it's not Cornel West, you think the Democrats, these Democrats, these establishment Democrats, if they get back the majority, you think they wouldn't reinstitute the filibuster so the Republicans could block them? I know what you're thinking. No, come on, Cenk. How many times have you thought that? And I've been exactly right. Again, luckily it won't be these guys, so we'll probably never find out. But if it was, no, they'd be like, oh, well, now that we're back in charge, we're going to be the good guys and put the filibuster back in. All right, anyways, finally, I Am Sock says, who would be the Sarabes of Bernie TV? Gabbard! That's funny, I Am Sock, as is your handle. Okay, we move forward. Now, the Bill O'Reilly story. New revelations involving Bill O'Reilly and the great number of sexual harassment lawsuits against him that were settled. Fox News paid them out. A fairly strong indication that he in fact did do it. Fox News, not a wilting flower. They don't usually shy away from a fight. especially if they think they're right, and oftentimes they're when they're very, very wrong. They did settle these cases. So let's go to the New York Times to give you some more details. An investigation by the New York Times has found a total of 5 women who have received payouts from either Mr. O'Reilly or the company in exchange for agreeing to not pursue litigation or speak about their accusations against them. The agreements totaled about $13 million. Now, let me give you a little bit of detail into what was in those lawsuits. The women who made allegations against Mr. O'Reilly either worked for him or appeared on his show. They have complained about a wide range of behavior, including verbal abuse, lewd comments, unwanted advances, and phone calls in which it sounded as if Mr. O'Reilly was masturbating, according to documents and interviews. Now, there is a very famous incident of that, and the tapes were released at one point. We know what O'Reilly said, and yes, I will quote that later in this story. Now, let's go over the number of lawsuits settled at Fox News, first against O'Reilly. 5 different ones settled. Now, to be fair to O'Reilly, one of those was not sexual harassment, it was just simply verbal harassment, which doesn't make it much better, but I'm keeping it real. But those are the ones that were settled. There are more allegations, but they have admitted to 5 of them, in essence, by settling. Again, Fox News, on a case like Andrea Tantoros, that is not on this list, they did not settle, and they're fighting her vigorously. She has an interesting case to make, but they think she can't prove it. So they're fighting her tooth and nail, even in the midst of this controversy. Now, you think the ones that they settled, they don't know that they absolutely positively did do it? Of course, that's why they paid out $13 million. Now, remember, that's just O'Reilly. Roger Ailes, on that count, they've settled 6 harassment lawsuits. There are dozens of charges, but they've settled 6. So giving us a grand total of 11 cases of harassment that Fox News has settled on just Bill O'Reilly, their leading host, and Roger Ailes, who used to be the head of Fox News. He's of course stepped down since all these allegations came forward and were corroborated. By the way, you know what he got as an exit package? Oh, you sexually harassed all these women, cost the company tens of millions of dollars in lawsuits? He got a $40 million exit package. They didn't take $40 million from him. They gave Ailes $40 million on top as he was leaving. Boy, seems like News Corp is really tough on these sexual harassers. In fact, Bill O'Reilly just got a contract extension, even though they knew about these lawsuits. Now, more details. The reporting suggests a pattern. As an influential figure in the newsroom, Mr. O'Reilly would create a bond with some women by offering advice and promising to help them professionally. He then would pursue sexual relationships with them, causing some to fear that if they rebuffed him, their careers would stall. Now, I'm going to give you details on that as well, because the details are gross, and the way he uses power is abusive and disgusting. So, before we get there, another thing that's gross is what his excuse is. Now, he doesn't deny that these things happen, and he can't, but instead he hides behind his children. Oh. So, here's what he said. But most importantly, I'm a father who cares deeply for my children, and it would do anything to avoid hurting them in any way. And so I have to put to rest any controversies to spare my children. That's his way of saying, oh no, of course I was innocent, but we paid $13 million in lawsuit settlements anyway, because my children, I cared so much about them. In divorce hearings, and I'm only saying this because he brought it up, okay? One of his kids said that in 11 years, they had almost never seen him. And the word never was emphasized. So those children he cared so much about, he apparently didn't bother to actually parent. Interesting. But again, he goes to his children. So sad, man. If you're that kid that never even saw O'Reilly when he was your dad, and now all of a sudden he's hiding behind you as he sexually harasses women left and right. Here's another one. Those of us in the arena are constantly at risk as are our families and children. My primary efforts will continue to be to put forth an honest TV program and to protect those close to me. There is no actual denial in those statements. There is just, oh, my kids, they attack my kids. Bill, they didn't attack your kids. It doesn't have anything to do with your kids until you brought them up. So stop hiding behind them. You're such a coward, an unbelievable coward. Okay, Now, there is, of course, one that we already knew about in the public record. Now, there's the one that was the verbal harassment. There's several others that I'm going to tell you about that is in the New York Times story. But there's, of course, Andrea Macris, who is someone we found out about a long time ago. And if you watch Countdown with Keith Olbermann or the Young Turks back then, you would have heard all the gory details. I'm going to give you some of those in a second. But let me remind you what happened there. Ms. Macris also said in the suit that Mr. O'Reilly, who was married at the time, what happened? I thought you cared about your kids. Not enough to apparently try to cheat on them. He and his wife divorced in 2011, threatened her, saying he would make any woman who complained about his behavior, quote, pay so dearly that she'll wish she'd never been born. Now, there is a lot of threats from O'Reilly, which I'm going to read to you in a sec, about what he's going to do to these women. Now, if you were falsely accused of something and you were super pissed and you said, oh man, they messed with the wrong guy, okay. But we have the tapes. We know exactly what O'Reilly said and exactly what he did with Macris. So let me read you transcripts from the tapes. And before I do that, actually, one more thing. You know, this is, I'm going to read you the transcripts in a second, but I want to go to Megyn Kelly. She wrote a book about this. And she explained to the point that about him saying, oh, there'll be hell to pay. She said, at Fox, the entire structure was set up to isolate and silence accusers. So it wasn't just O'Reilly. O'Reilly knew that Roger Ailes, who was also a serial sexual harasser, has his back. Now a new lawsuit says Bill Schein, who's still at the network, also had their back and would cover up at all costs. Now there's an investigation of their cover-ups being done by prosecutors in New York. Now, actually, let's do this. Let me read you all the threats from O'Reilly. Then I'll read you the transcript of what he actually said. O'Reilly said about this lawsuit from Macris at the time, this is the single most evil thing I have ever experienced, and I've seen a lot. So she's evil, not him. He says, but quote, but these people picked the wrong guy. Yeah, they picked a monster to mess with who has no morality and no sense of decency. And I don't mean his sexual proclivities. I mean what he does to these women to try to destroy them. Let's get into that. New York Times reports a public relations firm was hired to help shape the narrative in Mr. O'Reilly's favor. And the private investigator, Bo Deedle, who by the way is always on Fox News, that's funny how that works out, was retained to dig up information on Ms. Macris. The goal was to depict her as a promiscuous woman, deeply in debt, who was trying to shake down Mr. O'Reilly, according to people briefed on the strategy. Several unflattering stories about her appeared in the tabloids. See how sick these guys are? They know she's right, because they have the same transcripts I have. But they go after her anyway, trying to make it seem like, oh, she's a promiscuous one. Oh, she's just in it for the money. And they try to destroy her in the press. And they plant those stories with their friends in the tabloids. Now, because of that, and because of how disgusting they are, I'm going to actually read you transcripts of Bill O'Reilly trying to have phone sex with Macris. Now, what's amazing about this is the entire time Macris is not participating. It turns out she was recording this stuff after he constantly called her over and over and over again and masturbating on the phone. So this time again he's masturbating. Again, Macris isn't even saying anything. This is not reciprocal. And you hear it on the tapes. And here's what O'Reilly's telling her. Oh, you definitely get two wines in you. This is what he's saying he would do with her. As quickly as I could, I'd get into you. I would get him into you. Maybe intravenously. Get those glasses of wine into you. You would basically be in the shower, and then I would come in and you would have your back to me, and I would take that loofah thing and kind of soap up your back, rub it up all over you, get you to relax, hot water, and you know, you'd feel the tension drain out of you, and you'd still be with your back to me. Man, this is awfully specific. Then I would kind of put my arm, it's one of those mitts, those loofah mitts, you know, so I got my hands in it, and I would put it around front, kind of rub your tummy a little bit with it. And then with my other hand, I would start to massage your boobs, get your nipples really hard, because I like that, and you have really spectacular boobs. Again, he's saying this to a woman who is not saying anything back. This is not a two-way phone sex. This is just him heavy breathing into the phone, telling her all these things as he appears to be masturbating. And then here comes the best part. So anyway, I'd be rubbing your big boobs and getting your nipples really hard, kind of kissing your neck from behind. And then I would take the other hand with the falafel thing, oh, for Christ's sake. And I just put it in your on your pussy, but you'd have to do it really light, just kind of tease business. Look, the falafel thing, confusing the loofah for the falafel, yes, funny. But if you're in this situation where this pervert keeps calling you and without you saying you are interested in any way, shape or form, and he's your boss is calling you to tell you about how he'd rub falafels all over your breasts. And then if you play along, maybe they keep telling you you might get something. If you don't, you're going to get fired. This is a gross game being played at Fox News for years and years. That was over a decade ago, and they kept re-upping his contract. They didn't care at all as long as the money kept rolling in. Okay, so now let's get to the more recent cases. In 2011, Rebecca Gomez-Diamond, who had hosted a show on the Fox Business Network, also supervised by Mr. Ailes, was told the network was not renewing her contract. Similar to Ms. Makris, she had recorded conversations with Mr. O'Reilly, according to people familiar with what happened. Okay? Now, so let me continue that quote actually. According to people familiar with the case, armed with the recordings, her lawyers went to the company and outlined her complaints against them. Okay. So same exact thing. Even though he got busted, on the Makris case alone, he had to pay $9 million, or Fox News paid the $9 million for him. He goes and does it again with another anchor from Fox Business. And again, he calls her. Again, she doesn't participate in the phone sex. Again, this schmuck gets recorded. He hasn't learned a damn thing. It's because they're right-wingers. They don't like facts. They're like, you just got sued for the same thing, the same thing. Okay, I'm back with the loofah and the falafel. And again, busted and again has to make a payment. Okay, now we go to another person, Huddy, who was another anchor, Juliet Huddy. Among Ms. Huddy's complaints was that he made inappropriate phone calls. There it is again. The lawyer said in correspondence obtained by the Times. The letter said that when he tried to kiss her, she pulled away and fell to the ground, and he didn't help her up. He's such a bad guy, man. I know it's a tiny little detail, but he goes in for the kiss. She stumbles backwards, falls down, and he just looks at her. Now, on the case of Juliet Huddy, when she rebuffed him, he tried to blunt her career prospects, the letter said. So it's not just that he's trying to have sex with them or doing the unwitting phone sex or the not unwitting but non-consensual phone sex, right? It's that he has no indication from them, including in the phone sex, that they're at all interested in him. On top of that, he's basically threatening their careers. Now it's going to get a little bit more specific. Now let's stay with Huddy for a second. Before Ms. Huddy reached an agreement with 21st Century Fox, Mr. Newman, Mr. O'Reilly's lawyer, sent a letter to her lawyer outlining some embarrassing personal issues he said Ms. Huddy had. He stated that she would, quote, face significant credibility concerns if she tries to pursue a claim against Mr. O'Reilly. That, to me, this is the worst part. Not only did they do these terrible things, but then they set out to destroy you, even though they know for a fact that you are right. Okay, now we go to Wendy Walsh. This doesn't end. After dinner, she gets taken to dinner by O'Reilly. He keeps talking to her about how he can help her career. Then after dinner, she said Mr. O'Reilly invited her to his hotel suite. Ms. Walsh says she declined, trying to remain cordial. She suggested that they go to the hotel bar instead. Once there, she said he became hostile, telling her that she could forget any career advice he had given her and that she was on her own. He also told her that her black leather purse was ugly. Classic O'Reilly. He's mean, he's angry, he tries to come on to her, it doesn't work, and then he insults everything about her. Ms. Walsh continued to appear on his show for about 4 months, but she said she sensed that he had become cold toward her on camera. Then a producer for the O'Reilly Factor told Ms. Walsh that she would no longer appear on the show. She was never made a contributor. You know that contributor role pays hundreds of thousands of dollars. So O'Reilly basically said, if you play ball and you sleep with me, you'll get hundreds of thousands of dollars. If you don't, you'll get nothing. You'll get fired. And he made that clear enough, and it was provable enough, that they settled and said, you're right, and paid off these women. That's who this scum Bill O'Reilly is. So when you watch Fox News, understand who used to run at Roger Ailes and who is their number one star now. This guy who goes at home and harasses his producers, his co-hosts, and promises them jobs if they sleep with him, and if they dare not sleep with him, threatens to ruin their reputation even though he knows they're right. That's Bill O'Reilly. That's Fox News. Young Turks, we'll be right back. All right, back on the Young Turks, let me read you a couple of quick tweets here. There, if you want to send us tweets, it's hashtag TYTLive on Twitter. Smooth says, the same guy accused of dragging his wife around the house. Yeah, sexual assault isn't a stretch. It's sexual harassment, and it's in the divorce settlements and hearings, I should say, where there's accusation of him dragging his wife around the house, also partly made by his kids. Okay, Paulie Pasta Fazul says, O'Reilly and Ailes are like pedophile Catholic priests and they got away with it. Ethan Turpin says, threatening anyone who's powerless against you is a sign of real internal weakness. And Angelica Shorty says, damn Jenk, glad I wasn't eating. That's a visual I could have done without. O'Reilly is a disgusting human. I imagine referring to the loofah incident. Furthermore, you should be very thankful you were not eating a falafel. Okay, now let's go to tragic news. We've got another attack, unfortunately, this time in St. Petersburg, Russia. It's a major blast that tore through a couple of subway stations there. Let me go to the Associated Press on this. Bomb blast tore through a subway train deep under Russia's second largest city Monday, killing 11 people and wounding about 40 in a chaotic scene that left victims sprawled on a smoky platform. Hours later, anguish and fear rose again when people found and defused a shrapnel-packed explosive device at another St. Petersburg station. Now, as to who did it, it is at this point unclear. Obviously, people suspect terrorism. There was no immediate claim of responsibility for the attack, and which came while President Vladimir Putin was visiting the city, his hometown. So, obviously, partly meant at Putin, and not necessarily to assassinate him, but to send a message to him while he's in St. Petersburg. But there's a lot of people who might have wanted to send a message to Putin. Historically, the groups that do the most amount of terrorist attacks inside Russia have been Chechens and Muslim separatist groups inside Russia. Lately, of course, Russia has been bombing Syria very, very aggressively. So it could have been strike back for that from terrorist groups inside Syria. Again, no one has taken responsibility yet. We don't know yet. And this is a tactic that has been used, and unfortunately, in Russia before. There's two female suicide bombers that killed 40 people and hurt more than 100 in a Moscow subway back in 2010. And then in 2009, on a train from Moscow to St. Petersburg, there was a bomb that left 26 dead and 100 injured. So as you can tell from these pictures, not only were there a lot of people hurt and killed, but everyone else, of course, deeply shaken. And unfortunately, this terrorism is around the world. And we don't know who did it yet. It's within the first 24 hours of the bomb. But it doesn't really matter who did it in terms of whether you call it terrorism or not, because it is terrorism, no matter which group did it. So it is horrific pictures. And of course, if they are trying to protest what's happening in Chechnya or in Syria, it is a curious way of doing it, saying the violence you're doing to us is terrible, hence we will do violence upon you, is a sick form of irony. It loses any kind of moral high ground and leads to even more innocent deaths. So our, of course, hearts are with the people of St. Petersburg today. Okay, now let me give you one last story. Interesting developments in the story about how some Trump campaign people were apparently listened in on by intelligence. Now, Trump famously said that Obama had ordered a wiretap of Trump Tower. Now, that is not true. It's not President Obama who would have ordered it or who did order it. And there was no wiretap of Trump Tower. But as I said on day one of that, there could be elements of truth in it, that it might have been that somebody inside Trump Tower was listened on for a number of different reasons. Since then, we have some indication that that has in fact happened. Now, the way that it normally works, and might have worked in this case based on what even Republicans have said, is that our intelligence officials would be listening in on foreign officials. Now, when they do that, and sometimes, for example, they'll listen on the Russian ambassador, that's how they caught Mike Flynn. They were not wiretapping Mike Flynn, they were not listening in on Trump administration, or at that time, Trump campaign people, they were actually following the Russian ambassador, something we do on a regular basis. Now, if those type of calls came in to the Trump team at Trump Tower, there could be a record of them, and likely there is. Now, the question is, do you unmask the Americans on the other end of the call? Because the regular procedure is, okay, we've got a call here from a foreigner that we're tracking for whatever reason, and they're talking to an American. Normally, those names are masked because you cannot listen in on Americans without a warrant. That used to be the old rules. Now, the rules are much looser, and I think disastrously so, and they might have been in effect here, which allowed some, possibly, Obama administration officials to find out who it was that those foreign entities were talking to on the Trump team. A story out today from Bloomberg saying that the person who asked for those identities to be unmasked was Susan Rice. Now, Susan Rice, of course, top advisor to President Obama. Let's find out more about this. White House lawyers, according to Bloomberg, last month learned that former National Security Advisor Susan Rice requested the identities of US persons in raw intelligence reports on dozens of occasions that connect to the Donald Trump transition and campaign, according to US officials familiar with the matter. Now, it is super relevant whether she was doing that for national security reasons or political reasons. I'll get back to whether she was breaking the law or not at the end. Let me give you more details first so you understand the story. The intelligence reports were summaries of monitored conversations, primarily between foreign officials discussing the Trump transition, but also in some cases direct contact between members of the Trump team and monitored foreign officials. So, exactly as I was explaining to you before, and we've explained in previous instances, it looks like they are actually monitoring the foreign officials, not the Trump guys. But those foreign officials talk to the Trump team during the campaign. So, now let's go further. One US official familiar with the reports said they contain valuable political information on the Trump transition, such as whom the Trump team was meeting, the views of Trump associates on foreign policy matters, and plans for the incoming administration. Now, if it's at the time that they've already won the race, I'd be dramatically surprised, but you have to open the possibility that it could happen, that Susan Rice would want to know what their political plans for the next, administration is. They'll find that out soon enough. During the campaign, there would be far more sensitive political information that they could use for political reasons. That is not hard to imagine. Now, I know that these people are deeply respected in Washington. That doesn't mean they didn't do it. And now, whether it was for political reasons or national security reasons, giant question, because if it's for national security reasons, that means Susan Rice, the national security advisor, had good reason to suspect that the Trump team was in fact working with the Russians, and she had evidence to that effect. That's disastrous for the Trump team. If it turns out it was for political reasons, that's disastrous for Susan Rice, because she's not supposed to do that. That would be illegal. But you would have to prove intent, which is going to be very hard to do, that she intended to listen in on those calls and unmask the Trump team and find out who was on the opposite end of those calls for political reasons. That intent, again, very hard to prove. Now, Susan Rice did comment about this before Bloomberg broke this story. And by the way, this is not a right-wing outlet, this is a legitimate media organization. Susan Rice in the past has said, "I know nothing about this," meaning the calls. "I was surprised to see reports from Chairman Nunes on that account today." If Bloomberg sources are right and she unmasked the identities of the Trump team, well, certainly she knew something about those calls. And so that would be a pretty fairly significant lie there. Now, Susan Rice is not above politics. I thought she was the one person during the Benghazi stuff that actually acted in a way that was not as honest as she could have been, and I'm being very polite here. So look, I think as I've said to you dozens of times, as 9 Republican investigations have shown, there was no actual illegal activity in Benghazi. There was nothing to prosecute. There was nothing there. But at the time of those activities and the bombings and the killings in Benghazi, Susan Rice did go on television and seemed to try to direct attention away from it and pretend that it was about a video. And that was a misdirection that was totally needless and political. So I'm not in the camp of, oh my God, these beloved Obama administration officials would never do anything political. I don't know. I reserve judgment on that. So if this reporting is accurate, we might never know why Rice found out or decided to unmask those Trump team officials, but it could go either way. So let me conclude here with one more thing that's very important. Rice's multiple requests to learn the identities of Trump officials discussed in the intelligence reports during the transition period does highlight a long-standing concern for civil liberties advocates about US surveillance programs. The standard for senior officials to learn the names of US persons incidentally collected is that it must have some foreign intelligence value, a standard that can apply to almost anything. This suggests Rice's unmasking requests were likely within the law. But the reason I bring that up to you is not to say, hey, there's nothing to look at here and Susan Rice didn't do anything wrong. I'm not in that camp. I'm in the camp and have always been in the camp of the laws are wrong. They always tell us, don't worry, the NSA is not going to actually listen in on Americans. And it turns out, well, if you're talking to someone outside the country or a foreigner, they can easily, without a court order, unmask your identity. In this case, it happens to be the Trump team and it becomes a major political issue to be bandied back and forth. But what I care more about is the substance of the laws. If they can do it to the Trump team, they can do it to you. And look, if you thought there's a reason to suspect that these guys are working with foreign agents, hey, let's go to a court, let's get a warrant, and let's find out who's talking to these foreign agents and see if they're up to no good. In fact, at that point, if you've got good evidence on them, go ahead and wiretap them. That's how our system of law is supposed to work. That's how our Constitution is supposed to work. Instead, they changed it in the middle of the night, and back when the Republicans thought it was helping them, they happily agreed, the Democrats agreed, and what do we have? The government has more and more power. And now, even though they swore up and down that they wouldn't unmask American identities, at the drop of a hat, even in the midst of deeply political situation, they unmask American identities without going to court and just the executive branch deciding within their own power, we're going to listen in on you, and there's nothing you can do about it. Doesn't matter how unconstitutional it appears to be, Republicans and Democrats have agreed that they are going to abuse that power together. So now, given that it's political, the Republicans will complain very loudly about it. But when these laws were being passed, they didn't say a word. They loved the idea of that kind of power residing within the government. Now it's come back to bite them. So they can go ahead and spare me their crocodile tears. I'm not that interested in how they're going to howl injustice at this point. But it is a real problem for America. They should change the laws. And I don't know if Susan Rice did it for national security reasons or for political reasons, but it is troubling either way. Okay, I'm out of time now. Second hour is coming up. Believe it or not, there's yet another sexual harassment lawsuit now against Fox News. This one's about Roger Ailes. We'll tell you about that. And again, Trump supporters shocked to find out that Trump is not on their side. We'll tell you their reaction as well when we return.